Okay, so we're going to say something about what is metta and something about what is insight. So starting with, what is metta? So you're not in a time warp. This is the end of the retreat. but of course, we're on a spiral path, so we come round to the same things with greater depth over and over. So, what is metta? So, metta is, like everything else, empty. So, part of the meaning, the implication of that, of emptiness, is uncontainable, unfindable. And where would you look? Only possibilities, time and space, or concepts. So, it can't even be found in a kind of isolatable way in concepts. So mysteriously, it can't be pinned down in any way. This is the meaning of emptiness. And you could also say it's ungraspable. Vasantra really uses that word a lot, and it's really good because, you know, we grasp and cling to things, experiences, and concepts. And there's a lovely quote from Banti in this book, Living Wisely. He says, a net of concepts can, in the end, catch only concepts. A net of concepts can, in the end, catch only concepts. So it's not catching a lot there, is it? All of reality basically is falling through. It will slip through. I really like thinking of this example of, say, an orange, you know, the taste, the colour of an orange. And compare that to the word orange. It's just, it can't do it, can it? In any way, not in any way. So, yeah, reality will slip through the net of concepts. So, we can say metta's are co-arising. And we had all these factors that it co-arises with on that heart-mind map. And part of the implication or meaning of that co-arising is that two things that co-arise, they're neither the same nor different. And I loved Mary's example of convex and concave. So they co-arise. So are they the same or are they different? Well, you could sort of say, oh, well, they're the same, but looked at from different angles. But what's that really saying? I mean, if you look at something from a different angle, it's different, isn't it? It's different. It's a different experience. So you're really saying there, oh, it's the same and it's different. But you can't, that's meaningless because same and different are opposites. They can't be both the same and different. So really, it's more accurate to say neither the same nor different. So I and you or object co-arise. There is no I without some other object being. They co-arise. So if we think about any of the qualities that we looked at that co-arise with metta, you've got to have this same thing. They're neither the same as it nor different. So if you think about, say, for example, sensitivity, metta, you could say sensitivity is a condition for metta, or sensitivity leads to metta, and metta is a, or creates a sensitivity. So it's the same thing. They're neither really the same. That's interpenetrating in a sort of mysterious way. So all of those things. You know, they were vast, weren't they? The mind, there was so much in there, and really, we realized you could have extended out in indefinitely, really. So with this you and I example, just it's quite a nice example for this. So language helps to sort of fabricate this illusion of separation. So you get a phrase like, it is raining, okay? Or it rains. But what on earth is it supposed to be? It's really obvious in that example, there is no it. It's just raining. It's just raining, there is no it. So, I am sleeping, talking, hearing, cooking. Same thing. The I bit. There is no I that's separate, somehow separate from that, those experiences. So I find that a very helpful little example, the it is raining one. So we say that metta is a volition. Then what is a volition? So it's an urge or a wish or an intention for something to manifest. I'm going to go in this, I want it to go in this direction. I'm choosing for it to go in this direction. So something like a volition to stand up might arise. So then if you look closely what's going on there, I found that really interesting. So a volition to stand up, there's a kind of imagining of standing up. And then that creates this sort of pull. So you've got the imagining of standing up, you've got the fact that you're sitting down, and there's a kind of energetic pull that's created there. There's a sort of tension between the fact that you're sitting and you're imagining standing. So you've got a pull in the mind, and then that might, what might follow is, the body follows, but it might not do. So you might get conflicting volitions. You might get a volition to an imagining of standing, and then a volition arises, oh, actually, I'm not going to stand up. I'm going to practice radical uselessness and stay sitting. So different volitions, and then action, they may or may not be followed. So wishing someone well, well wishing, has this kind of directionality to it. May they be well. May they be well. And then if we imagine them well, if we evoke or imagine their wellness, then that kind of expresses or fosters that volition, that directionality of our energy, of our heart mind. That sort of impetus. So there's always this volitional aspect, but it could be really subtle. So if we're very still, we're very still and we're just paying attention to something, there's actually a subtle volitionality in that, a directionality in that. Because, we're paying attention to that thing, not everything. We're bringing, we're holding that thing in our awareness. We're bringing attention to that. We use that expression, bringing attention to that. So in that, there's an intention. There's an intention in that. So if the mind's completely sky-like, has absolutely no center at all, but as long as there's any kind of attention, even if it's a broad thing, there's some kind of movement in that. So this is another co-arising, really. Metta and awareness itself aren't really separate. Awareness and metta are not two, you could say. In the Vimalakirti Nidesha, it talks a lot in that language, This and that are not two. It's the same way of expressing and co-arising. Non-duality, another way of putting it. So that's what I wanted to say about metta. I'm going to pass over to Sadanandi.
Yeah. Deepa Ma sends quite a lot, doesn't she, about metta and mindfulness being very strongly connected. Can you be aware without having metta? Can you be mindful without having metta? Can you have metta without being mindful of the person? Mm. One of the qualities of metta is it has detail. I said that at the beginning of the retreat, didn't I? Mm. You see details. You don't see details because you've got some sort of strange perfectionist streak. You see details because you care. Mm. You care. So that's a quality of metta. And how does that quality of metta show up in our experience? So it shows up through our body, through the quality of presence. I've been using that word presence quite a bit. It shows up through our thoughts, and it shows up through our kind of emotionality, our sentimentality in some ways, our sentiment. And some people enter the kind of experience of metta through one of those doorways more than other doorways. So for instance, even though I'm quite a sort of emotional person, metta doesn't show up very emotionally with me. I don't sit on the cushion and experience heat and tears and feelings, if you like, emotions towards people. I was taught the metta bhavana by women that did feel that, so I always felt very lacking. But then I began to realise, oh, my metta shows up differently. People would say to me, you have a lot of metta. And I think that's funny because I'm not very demonstrative in many ways. I'm not very emotional in that area, in that arena. But my metta shows up through quality of presence. And what does that mean? That means a kind of, I'm working energetically with myself. It's like my quality of energy is, how is it affecting others? How is my energy affecting others? What is their energy doing? How do I need to move into that? So I'm thinking all the time about presence and the quality of my presence. Then I'm working with other people's energy in that way. What do they need from my presence right now? And I'm offering that. I'm trying to offer that all a lot. Then in terms of thoughts, my thoughts are not so driven, not so compulsive. They're not so sort of picky. They're kind of broader, easier, more relaxed thoughts. Sometimes I can hear that in my mind. The quality of my thoughts have got a different voice to them, yes? And then when I'm in touch with that, I know there's a quality of metta here. That quality of kindness, awareness, breadth, perspective, a sense of knowing, what I'm dealing with. So sometimes your mind just might open out and have more clarity to it. Call that metta. And then sometimes I'm deeply moved by somebody. An expression of kindness, I feel that in me. Quality of volition that Diyajyoti has just been talking about, I feel really strongly that I care. I really strongly care.